This is Mark Strassman, reporter with California Politics Today. We're about to speak to Charles Halpern in Berkeley, California, about the ICOC and related matters. Welcome to California Politics Today.
Nice to be with you, Mark.
Before we talk about the many issues involved with the ICOC, why don't you just give our listeners a little bit of background about yourself and your training and where your involvement in Proposition 71 and its aftermath were generated.
Good. I began my career in law and was a public interest lawyer in Washington, D.C. through the 70s.
Right.
At that time, I did a lot of work in the mental health law field.
Okay.
And that brought me into connection with some basic questions about biomedical ethics and the social control of research efforts. And because of that, I was elected to the Institute of Medicine of the National Academy of Sciences. And so that began a lifelong interest in the area of law and medicine.
Okay, so you've been in the field since before it was cool to be in the field.
Yes, that's right. Before medical ethics was a discipline, I
right.
was doing it.
Right, exactly.
And I moved out here to California 3 years ago.
Right.
And became interested in Prop 71. It was something that was so close to so many of my long-held interests.
Right.
I had some reservations about it prior to the election. After the election, however, I thought, look, this has been passed. Let's make sure that it's administered in a way so that we get the best benefits possible from this big investment.
Right.
And avoid some of the pitfalls if we can. So that led me to carefully read through the small print of Proposition 71, which not many people did, and that led me to a number of concerns. And so when they announced their plans for the first meeting of the Oversight Committee, I thought, hey, you know, this is something I have to be involved in.
Okay, well, that's a good background, and we're going to go in pretty close detail to your concerns that you expressed about that meeting. But let's jump over that, though, and see if you could bring us up to date on where things stand now, as far as you know, in terms of the ICOC's meetings and its procedures and its plans and where things stand there. And then we'll go into more detail about the points that you raised in your letter of January 6th.
Good. Well, as you know, the ICOC, Independent Citizens Oversight Committee, is the principal body which is charged with administering the $3 billion of taxpayer money
right.
that was appropriated by Proposition 71.
Right.
And it's the committee has now held two meetings. The first meeting in blatant disregard of the state's open meeting laws.
Right.
That was the first issue I raised with
right.
them. And the second, they did a little bit better, but they're still not there yet.
Okay.
To my way of thinking, they've now at least recognized that they're not above the law, that they have to pay attention to the laws, but they haven't really taken in the idea that democratic participation is something that's going to strengthen the administration of this new program.
Okay.
They still treat it as if it's something which is a necessary nuisance.
Now, have you, you've probably spent a lot of time thinking about this, where do you, and obviously this is your take on their motives, but where do you think they're coming from in this? Is it that they just don't know what democratic process is, or they're afraid of it, or they think that what they're doing is too important to be sullied with democratic process, or where exactly are they coming from, do you think?
Well, I think there are a lot of mixed motives here. This committee we're talking about is an unwieldy 29 members.
Right.
And there are probably very different points of view among them.
Right.
The most important person is the chairman of the committee.
Right.
Who was also the author and primary spokesman for Prop 71, and that is Bob Klein.
Who's also now the interim president of the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine.
That's right.
And so the head of the...
He's taken both the chairmanship and also the interim presidency.
So he's essentially the chairman of the board and the president of that
That's
organization.
Right.
And he's also head of the Selection Site Committee and the Presidential Selection Committee.
Well, he's not the head of the...
No, yes, he's on facilities. He's chair of the facilities and he's chair of the... chair of the site selection, but not chair of the presidential search
That's
committee,
right.
which he's on, though.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. So he is the central figure here.
All right.
My sense of him is that he is not somebody who is very sympathetic to the idea of democratic participation.
Right.
His view of appropriate decision-making is for a group of well-informed scientists to get together behind closed doors so that they can speak their minds with full candor and let them resolve how this money should be spent, what research should be undertaken.
Would it be safe to call this an elitist point of view?
Well, it certainly is that. It's one which is based in a distrust of the democratic process.
Okay. So we're going to come back around to that, I think, by the end here. But let's now, if we could, go over the major points that you made in this letter that you sent on January 6th.
Yeah.
Whom did you send it to?
I sent it to the members of the committee, the 29 members of the committee, including the chairman.
Okay. And you made a number of suggestions. The first one was clarify the scope of the program.
Right.
What's important about that?
That is incredibly important, Mark, because the proposition itself is very ambiguous about how this $3 billion is to be spent.
Okay.
Number one possibility is it is to support research using embryonic stem cells.
And only embryonic stem cells.
That's right. That's one interpretation. And the background for the passage of Prop 71, as you know, was the Bush administration's severe limitations on this kind of research.
Right, both in terms of new
stem cells.
Right, in terms of new lines and the amount of money expended on it.
Right. So much of the energy behind Prop 71 was anti-Bush energy.
And that caused the people to focus on saying, we're going to do the embryonic stem cell research that the federal government under Bush isn't going to allow or pay for.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, you know, one, perhaps, so that's one possible interpretation of what the $3 billion are for. The second interpretation is it's for stem cell research in general.
Right. So it would include cord blood and adult stem cells
exactly.
and all those kind of things.
Exactly, which has a lot of potential therapeutic benefits.
Right.
All potential, of course.
Right.
Not really realized.
Right.
But for that, there's no prohibition on federal support.
Right.
The third possibility, and there's also language in Prop 71 that supports this, is that anything that looks like there's a real promise for therapeutic benefit, they can support research that will support that.
Now, for example, I did an interview with Professor George Church at Harvard Medical School, who wants everyone's genomic sequences to be sequenced because he thinks that would do a lot of good for human health.
Right.
Is that something that could be funded under the third interpretation?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And then there's the whole field of computational biology, which is developing software and hardware tools to investigate the protein folding and all kinds of other biological processes. That would be eligible as well, wouldn't it?
Yes, yes. With this third interpretation, they could. There are really no limits to what kind of research they could support if they thought it sufficiently promising.
Now, who's in charge of deciding which of those interpretations is the operative one?
Well, that was the issue that I raised, number one, in my letter of January 3rd. And my view is it's the ICOC that has to make that determination.
Right.
And provide guidelines to the field.
Right.
And that until they've made that decision, they really can't make any other decisions.
Okay. So don't
have to make the decision once and for all. They just have to be clear about what their framework is for assessing grants so that potential grantees can decide it's either worth my while to apply or it's not.
Right. So a lot of this, I think, as we're going to see, has to do with the process and the sequencing, not genomic sequencing, but procedural sequencing, to make sure that the cart is behind the horse here.
Well, that's right. At the moment, the cart has gotten out in front of the horse, and it's partly, or in large part, due to the fact that Bob Klein is very anxious to start pushing money out as quickly as possible.
Right.
And he's starting to hear voices in the press, in the editorials, and even from some of the committee members that says, now, wait a second, it's more important that we do it right than that we do it quickly.
Okay. Well, I'm sure we'll come back to that. Okay. So that's one issue that needs to be resolved: the exact scope of the project.
Right.
Now, here's something that's slightly different: is the relationship between the ICOC and the California Research and Cures Coalition, which I spent a few weeks trying to get someone to speak to me about publicizing their meetings, which I, immersed as I am in this, mistakenly thought were going to be public meetings before the ICOC. And eventually that never happened. Apparently those meetings, one of them already took place. It was sparsely attended, according to the report I read. And it, in fact, was Express Yourself meeting in front of the CRCC, but not the ICOC. So I think you're right on target here to see that there's a little bit of confusion.
Yes, I think that's right, and we should. I've tried to encourage the ICOC to clearly split off from the CRCC.
Now, which it has,
let me just sort out all these,
please.
This alphabet soup.
Right.
Okay. First of all, there was a group called Yes on Prop 71.
Right.
That was the primary promotional group, the public relations group. They hired the advertising agencies to push through Prop 71.
Right.
Bob Klein headed that.
Right. And that was called the California Cures Coalition, wasn't it? The Californians for Research and Cures.
No, that's the new coalition. It's called California Research and Cures Coalition.
Oh, okay.
That's a successor organization to Yes on Prop 71.
I got it.
And that new organization is going to be doing promotional stuff and public relations and public education work.
Of what for what exactly?
Well, for stem cell research. Although you'll notice from their name, they don't even say, it doesn't say stem cell research in their name.
It's no.
California Research and Cures Coalition.
Right.
So exactly how they're going to answer that issue that we've been talking about with clarifying the scope of Prop 71's grant-making program,
right,
is unclear.
And from what exactly do they intend to publicly relate to? The proposition passed. The money is going to be in the account. What are they trying to publicly educate people about exactly?
I think it's just to keep up the level of enthusiasm. You know, there's already a kind of backlash among you see it in the editorial,
right,
saying, hey, you know, maybe we rushed into this thing too quickly and with too much money and without really understanding what was at stake. I think they want to keep up the drumbeat of promotional material.
So essentially they're cheerleaders for the ICOC.
Well, and cheerleaders for stem cell research. They see their mission to be not just limited to California, but to be nationwide.
Okay. Now, when I contacted Steve Wesley's office to try to get in touch with the people at the California Research and Cures Coalition, when I couldn't even do that, or ask for information about the ICOC, they referred me to the CRCC as kind of the official spokesperson for the stem cell project in California.
That's a serious problem. That's a serious problem. You see, the ICOC, this Independent Citizens Oversight Committee, is supposed to be a really solid, unbiased, scientifically grounded committee.
Right.
And they are not supposed to be promoting anything. They are there to administer in an objective fashion the $3 billion put forward by the California voters, which will be repaid over the next decade.
Right.
By you, me, and our children.
At a level of at least $6 billion.
At least that.
Right.
And for at least 30 years.
Right.
So, but this is supposed to be scientifically credible, really grounded.
I want to focus for just a second on the legal standing of that group. I've been thinking about this a little bit, and it seems to me that the closest analogy is the University of California.
The closest analogy to the ICOC.
Yes.
Yes.
But that it's a government. That it's an agency. It's an agency of the state government of California that has been created is being created out of whole cloth, with the promise that it'll have $300 million every year of 10 years, $3 billion to spend. But in fact, its place in the hierarchy of organizations is pretty much right next door to the University of California, in that they're controlled by the regents of the University of California, some of whom are ex officio elected officials in California, others are appointed by other processes that I'm not that familiar with. And they administer that huge organization according to various principles, but it's sort of, it's owned by, sort of, it's, it reports to the state of California in a way.
Well, this committee...
Am I right to say that about the ICOC?
Well, it's a very interesting comparison. The University of California is much more closely tied to state government and much more politically responsive.
Than the ICOC?
Yes, that's right.
So it's like that, except that it's more, it's less politically responsive.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Its mission is less clear. And, I mean, take, for example, the fact that the University of California has to go before the legislature every year.
Right.
And justify its budget.
So it's kind of one of these self-funding, off-the-shelf organizations that guy who ran the CIA for a while under Iran-Contra wanted to have, an off-the-shelf organization.
I don't want to go there.
Okay.
But the fact is that the University of California is much more an integral part of the state of California.
Okay.
One of the things that's so distressing about this new institution,
right,
is that it is isolated. It was designed to be isolated from the political process.
Right.
So it's not just a question of open meeting,
right,
or public participation. It's really the question of who is controlling the dispersal of this funds and overseeing it. Is it going to be this self-contained body, or is it going to be a body which is a true state agency that interacts with the legislature and the executive and has a range of relationships which really ensure a deep democratic control?
Yes, that person's name was William Casey, who ran the CIA in those days.
Right.
You're exactly right that this is the overarching issue that is going to influence these other points that we're going to be talking about, is to where that ICOC fits into the picture and what its rights
into the political,
right,
structure,
right,
that is the state of California's government.
Right, and as the things stand now, all they seem to want is the $3 billion
and to say goodbye.
We're going to run it now.
Don't call us, we'll call you.
Right, okay.
Yeah, that is what's distressing about this.
Okay.
And as you know, they embedded in Prop 71 the requirement that the state legislature cannot amend,
right,
any terms of Prop 71, no matter how foolish they prove to be in practice.
Right.
For 3 years.
Right.
And at the end of 3 years, they can only amend by a 70% majority of both houses.
So, in fact, it's a little bit like a very powerful virus that has means of defending itself that are state of the art.
Well, I don't want to go there either.
Okay.
I'm trying to find.
Yes.
The words that come to mind are bulletproof.
Okay,
this
bulletproof.
It was supposed to be set up so that it was bulletproof.
Okay.
So that there was no risk that mere elected officials might interfere,
right,
with the deliberations of this committee.
Right. So, in fact, the vagueness that we've been talking about here is, in fact, part of the strategy. If you can't see it or find it or define it, it's going to be hard to go after it.
Well, something like that.
Okay. Point number three that you made in this early January letter was establish conflict of interest rules for the ICOC. Now, of course, this does feed into what we've just been talking about in general, but focus specifically on the idea of conflicts of interest, what Proposition 71 says about conflicts of interest for the ICOC, for the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine, and especially the working groups,
yeah,
which you can tell people what those
about
are.
How the working groups fit in.
Right.
First of all, let's look just at the committee itself. The committee itself falls under the state's conflict of interest rules.
Okay.
But how they'll be administered and how they'll be interpreted is a difficult question. One of the points I made in my letter was that Mr. Klein, the chairman, had said that he would not hold any stock in a biomedical company so long he's chair.
Right.
Which is fine as far as it goes, but I pointed out in my letter that he was the head of a large and successful real estate company.
Right.
And that for the first few years of its life, this committee, the ICOC, is going to be administering what is, in effect, a real estate program.
Right. So he does have expertise in that area.
That's right. They are going to be handing out lots of construction money,
right,
to universities, to research institutes, to consortiums of private corporations and universities. And there's going to be a lot of money made in construction, in real estate sales, in brokerage, and leases, and the like. And if we're going to talk about conflict of interest, I said, Klein has a duty to say that he's not going to profit from any of these things.
And so
I'm pleased to say that he did, after I submitted this letter, submit his own letter to the committee saying that he will not profit from real estate transactions.
Okay, so that's
been
taken care of.
But that's only the beginning of the question of conflict of interest. Because as you take a look at the structure of this committee, conflict of interest is really built into it. Because a substantial majority of the people who are on the committee that is giving out the money are also people who want to collect money.
Right.
They are people who are executives in medical schools, in research institutes, in universities. So they're going to have to set up the rules for in their role as committee members to give money to themselves in their role as executives of research and academic institutions.
Is the term of art for that called self
conflict of interest?
Is the term of art for that self-dealing?
Well, you could say that.
Okay.
And how they are going to sort out this problem and establish rules which give the public confidence that they are, as committee members, functioning only as committee members, fully loyal to the state of to this fund that the voters of California have created, is a serious problem, because there will always be a hint, a sense that, well, you know, this is really a situation for what's called log rolling,
right?
Back scratching, for where everybody says, we'll make sure that you get your share as long as you make sure we get our share, and the ICOC has to, from the outset, take steps to assure the public that the conflict of interest problem is being dealt with.
And that's where openness and transparency come in.
That's right.
Okay.
So, and if you don't have, if you have this kind of conflict situation and a situation which is opaque and operating behind closed doors, public confidence disappears.
Okay. Now, what's the legal relationship between the working groups and the ICOC, and does the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine come into this at all?
Yeah, let me take a minute to explain the structure.
Okay.
The ICOC is the committee, Independent Citizens Oversight Committee, that operates the Institute for Regenerative Medicine.
All right.
The Institute for Regenerative Medicine is the body that actually allocates the grants, makes the contracts, pays the money out.
Okay.
And the committee that you and I have been discussing is like the board of directors of
right.
the Institute.
Right.
For a private corporation, we call it the board of directors.
Okay.
Now, the working groups set up by Prop 71 are extremely important and deeply troubling. The ICOC has three working groups, one which is in charge of research facilities,
right.
grants to build or lease new research facilities.
Right.
A second is to set up the overall standards and procedures for the grant program.
Right.
And the third is to make specific recommendations to give a grant to applicant A and not to applicant B.
Right.
So each of these three committees is appointed by the ICOC. Each member has a six-year term, a very long term in office.
Right.
And
Do they get paid for their work?
I don't know that.
Okay.
I don't know that. I think the ICOC has to decide whether and how much they're going to be paid.
Are the ICOC people being paid for their work?
They're paid $100 a day.
When they're in session?
When they're in session.
And the rest is volunteer work?
The rest is volunteer.
They all seem to be people who are well paid in their day jobs already. So
they are
most part.
Yes, for the most part they are very well paid in their day jobs,
right.
or else they wouldn't be able to afford to do that.
Okay. So we've got these three types
these
of
three working groups. And they are extremely important because they make the recommendations on which the ICOC acts. You see, the ICOC doesn't, the committee, the board of directors,
right.
has in effect, is reviewing recommendations that they receive from these three working groups.
Are those recommendations going to be reviewed by what's the role of the CIRM, the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine, in that process? Or are they out of that loop and they just carry out the orders of the ICOC after the working groups have made their presentations?
Yeah, the Institute for Regenerative Medicine is out of that loop. I mean, because once the board of directors has made the decision about grants, then they just pass the money out, they write the checks, They set up the grant guidelines,
right,
to make sure that the grants are being
used. So all the major decisions as to what kind of facilities are needed, who's going to build them, where they're going to be, the standards for all the procedures of the operation of all of these groups, and above all, the decision to give a company A or University B a grant is going to be made by the 29-member ICOC, and then they're going to tell the CIRM, write them the check.
Right, but the ICOC will be acting on recommendations coming from the working groups, which makes the working groups so crucial.
That's where the rubber meets the petri dish here, pretty much.
That's right. The rubber meets the petri dish in the working groups.
Okay.
And now what is troubling about that is that Prop 71 says that the proceedings of these working groups, number one, can be held behind closed doors and without any application of the state's open meeting laws.
Right.
And number two, the state's conflict of interest rules don't apply.
At all.
At all.
So the people can, a person from Company A on the working group to decide grants can say, that person, they still have those jobs. Do the working group people get have to quit their day jobs?
No.
So they can work at Company A, and they can have a project. They want to study stem cell C, and they can propose it to themselves, and then in the working group, if they convince everyone to vote for it, they vote for it, and they
get
the money.
You got it.
All right. Now, I had a long conversation with Barry Keene yesterday, who
yes.
was the state senator who was the co-author of Bagley Keene.
Right.
He thinks that those working groups ought to be subject to the provisions of Bagley Keene.
I agree with that completely.
Does that sort of seem like if this comes to people marching in the street with picket signs, it's going to say apply Bagley Keene to working groups? Is that a major demand right now of the people who are worried about this?
Well, I don't see street demonstrations around there.
No, I don't either. But is the shorthand, is the most pressing issue right now the application of Bagley Keene to working groups?
I think the pressing issues are everywhere.
Right.
You started off with one, and that is, what's the scope of this grants program?
Right.
So, I don't want to say what's the most pressing.
But that's one.
At the top, in the top tier of pressing issues,
right,
is this question of Bagley Keene open meetings as it applies to these working groups. Now, there's a very simple thing that the ICOC could do,
right,
this board of directors. They could say, it is our judgment that our program will fail if the working group's business is conducted behind closed doors.
Okay.
Because public confidence is so important, the working groups are so important, the public has to know that work is being conducted with integrity.
That's pretty much a political decision, isn't it?
Well, no. I think it's a core management decision.
Oh, okay.
If I were a member of that committee, that would be a high priority for me.
Okay.
To say the working groups have to be operating in public. And I would also say, again, as a management decision, the conflict of interest principles that are embedded in state law should apply to every member of the working group.
Okay. All right.
I would start from that proposition and say, well, then we may want to tailor them a little to the particular needs of the particular working group.
Right.
But that's our basic position, is we are operating with the same integrity and transparency that the other elements of the state government operate under, like the Board of Regents, to take your example from
right.
before.
Okay.
And we're going to do it just the same way, and so that the voters who put up this extraordinary sum of money can have confidence that this money is being allocated with real integrity.
Okay, if we can anticipate a reply on the other side of that and get your response to that, the argument can be made. In fact, Senator Keene said it was made in the 70s when this law was first proposed, that it's impossible to do the people's business in public and let the people know about it. There's intellectual property, there's personnel files, there's litigation, there are all these matters that need to be secret. What's your take on that argument?
Well, first of all, we've now had 30 years of experience in the state.
Right.
And the people's business can be done in public.
Okay.
And there is room enough under the laws for limited, narrow, defined exceptions. If there's a sensitive personnel matter, and there's got to be a preliminary determination of whether an employee employees should be disciplined. That can and should be done in private.
Right.
And the existing laws acknowledge that. So
it's essentially the idea of whether the default value is openness or secrecy.
Exactly, and the default setting should be openness.
Okay.
And where there's a justifiable reason for secrecy, then you have secrecy.
Okay. Let's focus on a sort of standalone issue here, where to put the headquarters of the Institute. Now, this is the Institute, to again get back into the morass of acronyms, this is the center, the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine's
right.
office.
Yep.
Where's the ICOC going to be?
The ICOC is a board of directors that will just meet 4 or 6 times a year.
Around at the USC Medical School or wherever they...
When the Institute has a headquarters, they'll meet at the headquarters.
Okay, so what we're talking about in terms of this site selection committee is where to put the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine, where the board will meet from time to time as well as meeting in other places, but that's where the checks are going to be written, essentially.
That's right, and that's where the staff... You know, a lot of people who voted for Prop 71 didn't realize that they were voting to create a substantial new bureaucracy.
Right, a bio-bureaucracy.
A bio-bureaucracy, that's right. And they can start off with as many as 50 employees.
And what are these employees going to be doing exactly? They're going to be...
They're going to be writing checks. They're going to be monitoring the research that's going on. They're going to be making sure that the conditions of the grants are being followed.
Okay, now, as things now stand, a committee has been appointed by the ICOC, chaired by Mr. Klein. Is it their charge to come up with the answer to where to put the CIRM?
To make a recommendation to the committee where to place it.
Do you know when they're due to make that recommendation?
I don't. The next meeting is in early February of the committee, and I don't. They may have a recommendation there. It's obviously a very consequential decision.
Okay, and you've recommended that there be a little bit more public participation in
Absolutely.
That discussion.
Absolutely. There should be open forums on this question. We should know. You know, I mean, one basic argument is say, well, let's take a look at where the biotech industry is.
Right.
And let's place the headquarters there.
Right.
Another approach would be to say, well, let's take a city that hasn't benefited from
right.
from the biotech development so far, and let's put the headquarters there and let them, you know, come into this important area.
Right.
And
in fact, I've proposed, when I'm not being a journalist, I've proposed that it be put nowhere and everywhere in cyberspace, and that people be able, that all, the 50 employees, the 50 biobureaucrats, telecommute to servers in wherever it's cheapest to put them, and do all their work from their homes and not need to relocate and not need to be stuck in traffic and not need to either spend money for office space or get it contributed and have a quid pro quo later, do all their business that way.
I think it's an interesting idea, and I hope that the committee will consider it.
But as things now stand, unless I barge into one of those secret meetings of that panel, it's not even going to come up for discussion.
Well, let's hope that they will hold an open hearing before that is decided, and that you'll have an opportunity to present your proposal to the committee.
Okay.
The way it ought to be done.
Well, that leads to the sort of the meta-procedural question here. You've made a number of recommendations that the scope should be more clearly defined, that the Bagley-Keene Act should apply, that there should be public discussion of where to put the Institute, and all of these questions. Now,
right.
as things now stand, what recourse or appeal or traction do you and other people who share your views on these and other issues have to have any impact here?
Well, there are three possibilities.
Okay.
One is to file a formal petition to the committee, requesting them to take certain specified steps.
Okay.
Such as applying Bagley-Keene to the working group.
Right.
Second, continue to make informal suggestions through letters or otherwise.
Okay.
Third, file a lawsuit.
Right. And who would it be filed against?
And that the court order
right.
this committee to do its business in compliance with the state's constitution and statutes.
Okay. Now, what do you know about organization? I've talked to several group representatives of several groups. There's the Center for Genetics and Society in
yep.
Oakland. There's the California Nurses Association. There's Californians Aware. There's you. There's the Foundation for Taxpayer and Consumer Rights, to name just four,
right,
and one person. Is there a consortium or alliance of all these groups to get together and have their own procedure, presumably in the open, to talk about whether a petition should be filed, informal suggestions should continue to be made, or a lawsuit should be filed, or all of those?
At the present time, there have just been informal conversations.
Okay.
Among all of those groups that you mentioned.
Okay.
Have been, and no decisions have been made.
Okay. Because it seems to me that the logic, that as the law of dialectics works, that the thesis of the ICOC is going to generate the antithesis of this alliance of groups that want to reform it, and that they ought to get together in an open way, exemplifying everything that they've suggested that the ICOC do, and put together a concise list of theses to nail to the petri dish there, and say, here we stand, we can do no other.
Yep, well, the process is underway.
Okay. All right, anything else you want to say about that process now, or is this pretty much wrap up where we are?
Your questions have pretty much illuminated where we are now.
Okay, good. Then let's get everyone to listen to this conversation, and then we'll move on from there.
Excellent.
Thank you very much for your time.
Nice talking to you, Mark.
Talk to you later.
Bye now.